not often you meet people who have shared experiences, and one of those shared experiences was with Sarita Talbert. She lost her 17-year-old son, Jalen, to violence, and Sarita did everything she could to really create a lasting legacy for him, sooner than most people would be ready to do that. I'm Marian Shuck, your host at Let's Talk Hope, a podcast devoted to sharing stories about organ and tissue donation, speaking with donor families, recipients, subject matter experts that can help us shed the light on how we can be advocates for organ and tissue donation, but really giving people a chance to understand the process of donation and how people can advocate for themselves. Sarita, welcome to Let's Talk Hope.
Let's Talk Hope. Hi.
So, Sarita, you and I, we know each other for quite a while now. We both have shared stories of loss and donation.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about that today. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, a little bit about Jalen, and the tragic circumstances that led him to becoming an organ donor?
Well, as you said, we've been together for almost 8 years coming up this year. So 2017 started my journey of really understanding the tissue and organ process. I've always been a donor, checked off on my driver's license, but it wasn't as impactful. Then it hit on August 30th. So in celebrating my father's 75th birthday with family and friends, Jalen was absent. And throughout the course of the day, just wondering where he would be, because that's not like him not to show up. And received a call that night from someone at Christ Hospital, that he'd been in an accident. So went to the hospital, and just in engaging in conversation with the staff there, learned that he had been shot one time in the back of the head. He had been airlifted from another hospital to Christ. He cold blued a few times, so just was in a very unstable position. And in hindsight, my aunt said that I mentioned to her before anybody came in the room, if he doesn't make it, that I wanted to donate his organs. So as time had it, my gift of hope angel, who I always forget her name, came into the room. We had the discussion about him being an organ and tissue donor, what that process looked like. And I was completely on board for it. So as time went on, I did not want his death date to be my father's birth date. So since they had not clinically stated he was brain dead, we kind of waited until the next day because they still wanted to see if he would be stable. And he kind of cold blued, I think, twice. They were able to revive him back. And I think on that second time, I had a conversation with him. And just said, Jalen, if you're ready to go, go. Because I don't know what that feels like. I don't know if you're still present, but this is you and me. We've always had a bond. And so when you feel like you're ready, then I need a sign, because I don't want to make this decision on my own. And I do share, I don't know if the mind plays tricks, but at some point, his hand just kind of fell to the side of the bed, and I took that as my sign. So I was at peace with, if he cold bleeds again, we will begin the process. So hours later, he did, and I just had peace about the entire transitioning that I'm losing my son. But God's will. He had other plans. He did what he was supposed to do here on earth. What I share with people is that what gives me peace continuously is that through the opportunity of organ and tissue donation, his life wasn't a period. That bullet did not put a period in his life, a semicolon. And so thus, he is still out here in two individuals young lady. I believe she was in her 30s at the time, 31, and a gentleman who was in his 60s. So to know that they're out here and then through skin and tissue enhance the lives of others gives me a sense of peace that he's still here. He's still grounded. 6 months after he passed away, I was in his room bargaining with God about if I'd be a mother again, if he let me be a mother again, whether it's through natural, but just let my body bounce back much quicker.
As always.
Yes. Because you got to be specific with God. But just through adoption, surrogacy, foster parenting, everything that I mentally in that moment thought that would help me put me back in the position of caring for someone and loving on someone and nurturing some of my mother instincts, because I only had 21 years. I'm missing out on a whole lot more. And so God said, I'm going to do you. These are happy tears. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do you one better. So that was on a Sunday night, 7 o'clock in his room. On Monday, around the same time, met with the young lady who had left a message in my door. And come to find out, I had a 3-year-old grandson that my son did not know he had. And so, yes, we did DNA tests, but he is the replica of my son. And I don't think he understands his purpose in life, how he saved my life. Because losing a child in that manner, I am very transparent to say that I fell into dark places. And the want and need that I thought of, I don't like to say committing suicide, but leaving here because I was chasing, trying to be with him. You know, when you go to sleep and the dreams are so vivid and it just feels so real, you don't want to wake up. You want to stay in that space because it feels so present, so HGTV. But God said, no, I have other plans for you. And he gave me that gift. And so going back to gift of hope, it's my hope that at some point we meet the recipients of Jalen's kidneys, because then his son can physically touch his father through someone else. So that gives me hope and light. And it took me 5 years to send emails or letters. So now I just kind of send randomly, yeah, when it's appropriate for them. And I know on God's timing, he will make sure that we connect. So that makes me want to live. That's my gift of life, my gift of hope. Through that, before he passed away, I was already doing candles. And so when he transitioned, candles became my creative grief therapy of healing. It allowed me to come out of a dark space, because the scent brings you back to nostalgia and you have to watch time and measurements. So you can't think about nothing else but what you're working on. And that has now evolved from me doing candles out of my basement to doing candle workshops to, prayerfully, next month I'll be opening up my own candle bar, not too far from here. And it's called Experience, because I had to throw my name in there. A candle bar, because that experience is the root and my purpose of the candle bar. Not just you come, make candles, you leave. Mm-hmm. It's a place for healing, a place for creating moments that will become memories that I pray at some point brings you through those dark times, and then you bringing fellowship with other people. So it's a happy environment.
Good. So let's talk for a minute just about, you know, there are a lot of myths and misconceptions out there around organ and tissue donation. There are a lot of myths and misconceptions around how communities of color are treated during those tragic moments. Can you speak to if you'd had the conversation with Jalen about being an organ donor? I know that he was 21. So had you had the conversation with him about organ tissue donation? And then two, help us understand from a donor family perspective what that was like in the hospital in terms of how they took care of Jalen or how they didn't take care of Jalen, how that made you feel. Did you think that you got the best care to be able to save his life? And then when you recognized that he was going to be an organ donor, did you really understand the process so that you could, you know, make this experience less traumatic for you?
I'll be honest. God's hand of grace and favor has been on me. So this entire process has not been traumatic for me. I think he knows my heart and he knows what I can and cannot deal with. Regarding Jalen, I know when I took him for the second time to go get his driver's license, we did have the conversation. But again, it was from my naive and ignorant lens of not really understanding it, but just, hey, Jalen, they're going to ask you this question. And this is what it means. Again, I didn't know the full totality of it. We can't take it with us. It's probably my conversation. We can't take it with us. It'll help somebody else. And just recently, I said I need to see if I could find his wallet for his driver's license to see if that was on there. I can't remember, and the curiosity just kind of sparked. So that's one of the things I want to look for. As far as my experience in the hospital, like I said, I had already pre-shared. And again, that was probably because something I knew I wanted to do. Now being on the employee side, I will say that I have that much more appreciation and love for the process because I'll be honest, I can't remember if she explained in full detail, and she probably did, but my mind was just, okay. What I do know was that they said, once you make that decision and it's time, we only have, you know, a short amount of time to take him, you know, to prep him. And in my mind, I'm thinking seconds. I remember being in the room when I made the decision. They brought him to another room to prepare him. The doctor looking at me, I gave the look to go ahead and pull the plug, and then just watching his heart stop. Again, I was at peace because I was there when he took his first breath. So not everybody gets the opportunity to be there. Not that they want to take that last breath. So again, that was my seed of peace. And from the time that his heart stopped until the time they came to transport him seemed like forever to me. I did not feel rushed at all. I was even probably thinking, how much time do I got? Right? Because this is a long time in my head. But not once did I feel rushed. We had lots of family in that room. We prayed. I'm an energy person, so I knew I did not want him leaving or transitioning in a space of chaoticness, of sadness. So I made sure I was kind of quiet. And others I knew were going to be reflective of my energy, and they respected that. So it was a beautiful transition. And to see him from the lens of them carrying him off, I really didn't think, what would he look like at the funeral home? I know I may have asked the question, and they said, you can have an open casket. And then that for me was like, okay, that's all that mattered. I think I was more concerned after I heard he was shot in the back of the head, if I was going to be able to see his face. So for them to say, no, you know, you won't. And I said, I'm fine with it. I made sure I had the conversation with Callahan Funeral Home about it. And they didn't have a problem with it. So that gave me peace and ease. Again, after joining Gift of Hope and then attending my first town hall, and then understanding the beautiful thing that you guys do of honoring our loved ones in the moment of silence, even from the hospital room to the boardroom, you all stick with that mission. And as a donor mom, that supersedes anything for me, because you guys just don't talk about it. You actually do it. And I'm honored that I get to see both sides of it. And so conversations have been easy for me to have with my loved ones because now I'm learning. I understand it better. I had people when he was still connected calling, asking, was he on or was he a donor, because they had a loved one. And I was like, I don't know how that process works. I'll give you the person. So again, that was me not understanding. I'm just like, I don't think I could tell you all you can have this kid. I don't know. But in hindsight, that was just, again, a seed that I'm like, okay, well, how does this work? You know, and so I did ask questions. And then that's when my Gift of Hope angel at the time shared with me, you know, how that transplantation process works and mm-hmm. on the list. But if we did know someone, you know, that they could have been tested for. So then that sparked a domino conversation with my family members after we lost an uncle to kidney failure. Like, hey, we have three nurses in our family. Why didn't any of us have the conversation about being living donors? Mm-hmm. They're nurses, but they're not educated or even thought, I guess, in the realm of what they do. So that has kind of been my little mission of sharing those conversations with people. I feel in the African-American community, when you're talking about debunking some of those myths, is we're already PTSD. So mm-hmm. saying, hey, instead of thinking in death donation, do you have somebody who's on dialysis? And 90% of the time in our community, we know someone who's going through dialysis. So it's a lot more tangible to say, well, you could be a living donor. Oh, well, what does that look like? And I am able to explain and they have the conversations. And I'm praying that that sparks, because you kind of see a light bulb goes off because we don't know.
And that sparked for you pretty early on.
It did.
Because you started volunteering with Gift of Hope pretty early on. And we also were able to identify when we had our bench dedication program that we wanted to honor you and wanted to honor Jalen's legacy. Tell us a little bit about what that meant so early on in your journey after losing him.
I want to say it became tangible at that time that I said yes, and he was rolled away. And again, my Gift of Hope angel explaining that process of what that looks like and what it really meant to save someone. You just don't think about it, you know, because you're thinking after death, whatever you do with me, you do with me. But to actually tangible, like there's really a part of him still here, you know, able to allow someone else to carry on. It just does something. And so for me, that bench dedication, even now, I walk the dog over there when my grandson is here. He takes pride when people are sitting on that bench, because I don't think people pay attention to the little plaque that's on there. But when we show up, he's first to say, you're sitting on my daddy's bench. And then they kind of look and they're just like, oh, so again, that's a conversation piece in the middle of the hood when you have all this commotion with children, where we're actually having conversation about organ and tissue donation and debunking some of those myths. They're trying to harvest. No, they're not. Being on this side, I've gotten more educated going through or becoming an ambassador and being able to speak at some of the hospital events and talking to hospital staff afterwards. I've been blessed to be educated. So my path has been one from the donor side, the ability to see it as a parent so I can talk to them and share, and people grasp because I'm very transparent. And so I do have those uncomfortable conversations, but people listen because they give me that grace because my son was murdered.
And you also have made it your mission to talk to young men.
Yes.
You've made it, you know, quite clear that because of what happened to Jalen, that this is a demographic that really needs some more connectedness.
Yes.
To be able to help them understand not only the trauma that they experience, the trauma that you experience and Jalen experienced, and then how to bring it full circle to say, if you were educated on this and if you knew this, then you might not make these decisions
yes.
that cause harm to someone else. Why was it so important for you to really support this demographic?
I think they're a lost demographic. My son was blessed, a blessed tribe. He was exposed to a lot. However, he was the golden child out of his group of friends, and they really suffered after he passed away, because for them, it was a semi-wake-up call. if it happened to Jalen, the least likely, the person who was in college, the one who encouraged us to go to school or get off the corner or the street, if it happened to the backpack boy, is what they called him, the college boy, it can happen, even though that was their life. It was something about his death. And so I was a surrogate mother to them. I still am. And I don't judge. So a lot of it is, as a community, we give up too easily, forgetting that a lot of them are missing just simple. Some have never been hugged. They grow up in these environments. They are emotionalist. As young boys, they're taught early on, especially Black boys, you bet not cry. So we're stripping them of emotion for them to be connected to someone to appreciate life when you can't cry. You can't show emotion. That means you're weak. And so what are we filling them with? So for me, I understand that because I sat and had conversations with them. If you had ample resources, what would you do to help your community, your demographic? And they said, for people not to give up on us too easily, we don't know. You're hearing from the people we're trying to service. Instead of us growing out of that and people, well, I was exposed to this. Well, that was your life path. Everybody doesn't afford that. And so for me, I want to be the catalyst to encourage them, to get them involved. So having this conversation with them, again, it gets the balls rolling. And I know I can't save everybody. I don't know, but I know they listen to me. And who knows what side conversations they're having or seeds were planted within them. And at some point, I want to do more for them. It's getting them to a place where they feel okay and transparent and not feel judged, where they can let down their guards because they don't know I can be emotional, you know, and to get them to understand, you know, you get them to understand about organ tissue donation. Again, they're educating their families as little, it's seeds. The most that I've tried to remind myself, you can't go save a whole community, Sarita, but the more educated I can, the more in a fun and engaging way I could talk to them, the more if they make it past 21, if they make it past 30, if they make it out of these traumatic households, they're now educated to become organ and tissue donors, to educate their families. So if people go on dialysis or in sports, you know, I'm educated to say, you know, when you have, you know, some of these sports injuries, you probably have somebody's tissue in you. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh, I didn't know that. And I'm just like, yeah, mm-hmm. You know. And so, again, it becomes tangible when they can feel like that did happen to me. I turned my ACL. Now they're questioning, well, how do I find out? And I'm just like, well, you can call this number. But again, I don't think that they realize that it's just more than you die, someone takes your organs out, and then you don't know what happens after it.
Absolutely. That's the one thing that we talk about is folks understanding the process of donation, right? That's how we educate. That's one of Give the Pope's big pillars, education, awareness, and registration. So people understand the process, they have a conversation with their families, and then they register to be an organ and tissue donor. But I want to move a little bit because, you know, as we've been talking, you talk so much about what you're doing, how you're supporting the community, how you're such a catalyst. But as a donor mom, how do you practice self-care in the midst of this? As a donor wife, I recognize, because it'll be 5 years for me on Juneteenth, and I recognize that we put so much in other stuff, other people, that we have to be mindful that we still experience the loss, right? A loss that will never leave us. But how do you practice self-care throughout all of this?
I've learned to say no. I learned early on that not saying no was not good for me. I went back to work, I think, way too soon, but I was so worried about, I still have commitments. And so it was learning how to balance being a responsible, still viable, I still have bills to take care of. But then I tuned in to my mental bandwidth. How far is it being stretched? What is my temperature on what I can and cannot do? And sometimes I have to have those talks with myself and have a good tribe of girlfriends that will tap me on my hand if I'm doing too much. Serena, are you doing it because you just have a zest to do it? Or are you going through a depression and you're taking on more than you need to take on to deflect? And so those are the uncomfortable conversations I thought I had mastered. But when people check in with me, that's, you do an amazing job checking in and asking, honestly, from an employer standpoint, because I've been in other situations where they don't care. And so you feel like, okay, well, let me just do what I need to do. You definitely keep a pulse from a lens of making sure, I know this is what we are asking of you, but are you okay? So for me, again, God has tapped me with a great holistic. So from a work standpoint, I get that check-in. From my family and friends, I get that check-in. But I think I've done a very good job learning to balance and checking with myself to say, mm-mm. So there are days where I'm not feeling it and I don't even shut down properly. I literally back my seat up and I walk away, because otherwise I will get tied into, well, let me finish this. Let me close out these. So I've learned to back away and I've learned to shut down. And the most important thing is I've learned to tell people when I'm not okay. So when I'm not doing well, I'll call someone and I'll simply say, pray for me. And that, again, because it could just be a moment that I'm going through and I could be at home by myself alone. And I know I don't have an excuse not to, because I tell people, you have no excuse. You call me. And so I'm utilizing my own words when something's coming up. And energetically, I kind of know who to call in those circumstances. So I know which friends to call that is just going to show up in my house and just, we don't say anything. We just are being. And the ones that will, I'm on my way to get you. And then the ones that, well, let's talk about it. So for self-care, I go back to candles when it's just, I need to remember. I need those happy tears to just flow, even if I'm screaming, why? And sometimes just screaming at home, even though my dog looks at me, be like, well, what's going on?
Absolutely.
I don't hear a fire truck. Why are you howling? And sometimes now he joins me because he's confused about what.
Absolutely.
And I think I tell people, sometimes you just have to shout, because even when you are tapping the pulse mentally, it's still internal. You're still processing internal. And sometimes we just have to get it out. And so I just scream.
The thing for me, the check-in, is because I remember at my aunt's funeral, and the pastor was, and he said, all of you are going to be here today. You're going to be here tomorrow. He said, but the family's going to need you beyond
yes.
the next 2 weeks, beyond the next year, beyond the next five. And so it's always been my mission, and it really stuck with me as a young woman to say, that's true. And then when it happened to me, it was the same. Everybody shows up in mass,
yes.
right? And they want to, oh, what can I do? What can I do? But as the days get long,
the calls, the word
gets short. Mm-hmm. So, for me, it's just important, no matter who's in my life, if you've experienced a loss, I'm going to continue to be there. Which brings us to the point where we've been talking about, we've been skirting around it just a little bit, okay. about you being an employee, a gift of hope. And so I want to preface it that, you've been a consummate volunteer for Gift of Hope. When you can, you do. You show up. And so about 5 months ago, we just happened to be at another event and, seeing you again, was just like a light bulb going on for me. And I thought, and I had an opening, and I thought of you for another position for which you applied, which is a donor family specialist position. But it was told to me that you were a better fit for my role and for community outreach and throughout the interview process. And I just said, wow, I didn't think about that. I thought about you for the donor service, the donor family specialist position, just because of your journey as a donor mom, as the donor family, in the ability and your tenacity and your generosity that you've given back to donor families over the year. I thought that that would be a good fit. However, I'm so glad that it was a better fit. And both teams are under me. Don't get me wrong. Both teams are under me. But a better fit for you to be in the community. And so I'm so glad that you started with us in December.
Renata was like, I don't want to do this. I don't. But I think, yeah, you're going to have to go with Marion. I really want you. But and I was like, wherever you want to need me. I didn't know what that looked like. What I have shared with you all, I share with other people. I didn't go into group grief therapy. Again, as an energy person, I don't know what I'm walking into when you go into those group therapy meetings. Gift of Hope became my group therapy for me because I at least knew somewhat of the energy I was walking into. And because it was always something to do with helping the community or families, I knew that's what I enjoyed doing. And so it allowed me to cry with other, and we have a familiar tea of pain. And that I would have volunteered for the rest of my life because that's my therapy of doing something. You know, I feel good when I leave. Every time something happens, I walk away from there feeling good, poured into. I'm not guaranteed that with a regular, and I have nothing against those that go. But for me, I know what it feels. I went into that angry space, and I know people will give you grace when you're in that space. But I'm also conscious that the mind will let you start developing those nasty characters and qualities because it feels good and people will give you that pass, and next thing you know it, you've become a shell of who you are. I know that's not what I wanted to do. So being with you all as part of this family, I'm enjoying. I've been shadowing Tanisha, going to the different events. Whenever they say Sarita Kate, I'm there. I got you. As I figure out what my lens and vision and my pulse of the community, I know next year I will be a force to be reckoned with because the ideas just come at night. And I have to say, Sarita, be patient. Understand the process. Understand what this looks like, you know, because I'll just jump in and figure it out later. But this is a different lens. It's a very organized way of doing things. But to be able to be provided that space to take my loss, my passion, and then give me the grace to go with it, to educate it. Did I see this years ago? Absolutely not. But when God says move and you ask, I got to move my feet and do it. And I feel good. Honestly, I'm 50 this year. I've worked a few jobs. None of the, and I like my other job, but I love this. I love it. And all the chaoticness and all of that, I love it. It's my healing. It's my peace. It's my joy. And to understand it again from the back part, I'm just that much more happy that Jalen was able to give the gift of life. And then through the flag raisings, it's the moment of silence at the beginning of every town hall that I just like, I hope nobody sees me crying, but I just get emotional. And then hearing the stories that go behind to make these things happen, you're just like, I want to tell the world. And then you meet the recipients and you're just like, oh my gosh, we need to share your story. But I have to calm it down and go at a pace.
And thank you for that, because it is so important. People tend to forget that we have over 400 employees that do this work. 400 employees that really make sure that we honor the donor families and thank them for the selfless gift that they give. 400 employees that have experienced loss themselves, not all of them, but we are not immune. I wasn't immune. Sean Martin, our VP of tissue, wasn't immune. He lost his son. I lost my husband. Renata lost her father and her brother. So we're not immune from death, and no one is immune.
That's one thing we're guaranteed.
We are guaranteed. And so because of that, I just thank you so much for just the ability to be a donor mom, but also to be present, to also, because grief comes to us all differently, but that you were so, you know, I won't say gung-ho, but you just sort of moved your grief in a positive manner that allowed us to see who you were, but then now also allows us to see you as an employee in this work and just be proud of all the things that you're accomplishing for not only donor families, but for recipients, for those that are waiting, and for people in the community. Because as you know, us both being African-American women, we see a lot of people in dialysis. We see a lot of people waiting
on every
transplants,
corner.
And we see a lot of people with a lot of comorbidities. And so I thank you for coming on board to Gift of Hope.
Absolutely.
I thank you for being a consummate donor family mom. And also, more importantly, but I thank you for being a friend and coming on the club today to share your story with me. You won't believe how often people are like, oh, I don't want to go on a podcast. You heard Dr. Boyles. Oh, I don't know about that. But if I didn't do this podcast, if I didn't share these stories, then people wouldn't know.
Exactly.
Right? That there are people out there like you who was gracious in your giving of Jalen's organs, who throughout the most horrible day of your life, couple of days of your life, that you were able to say yes, but that you were able to say, this is bigger than me. There are other people out here who need to understand this.
Yes.
And people, you know, today from this podcast, we're going to say, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Here's a woman who lost a son, most tragically possible, but yet look at the grace, look at the resilience. And now she's working for Gift of Hope too. What more can I ask for a guest?
Like I said, I just tell people, it's your loved one doesn't have a period. It's that semicolon. And so long as we have breath, it, for me, I'll speak, but just talking to other donor families, it just feels good to know that a piece of them is still out here, or pieces of them are still out here. And that's the tangible piece that did not get buried in the grave.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sarita Talbot, for being my guest today on Let's Talk Hope. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and follow us and tell people about us. You can find us on any platform that you stream. Our podcast is produced by Rivet 360, and Terry Lydon is our executive producer. Jennifer O'Neill is our producer, and Kleana Henderson is our associate, along with Maggie Siami, providing administrative support. Gift of Hope is an organ procurement organization, and you can register your decision at giftofhope.org. You can listen to other podcasts at rivet360.com. Thank you.